Welcome to our study of Joshua. This is The Good Word. I am your host, Bob Resch. With me are my conversation partners, Dr. Matilda Fry and Dr. Jody Washburn. And you probably know them from the last 3 months. We will begin our study of the book of Joshua with Lesson 1, Recipe for Success. But first, Dr. Fry, tell us something about you, what you do here, and your academic background.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on this study again. I teach at Walla Walla University in the School of Theology, and I teach mostly biblical studies, especially Old Testament studies or Hebrew Bible, including Hebrew language. And I enjoy my classes with the students. These are often classes that require some background knowledge to the Bible, and so we are dealing quite a bit with contextual understanding of the ancient time, of the biblical writers, of the biblical texts and stories, and we enjoy reading through the text. So that is mainly what I do here at Walla Walla University.
Thank you. Dr. Washburn, would you tell us about you? Some of the same questions.
Yes. I have some training in Hebrew Bible and some in social science, or like how people work, basically. And so I'm really interested in conversations between those fields. I used to teach Hebrew language and Hebrew literature and archaeology of the world of the Bible, and now I teach in the School of Social Work and Sociology here. And so I'm really interested in looking at these texts, this sacred literature, we could say, as a window into the human experience and into the quest for big questions, like how do we relate to the land and to our sense of who we are and what our meaning and purpose is.
Thank you very much. We're beginning a study of the book of Joshua, and for me it is a difficult book. I don't know about you. But we're going to plunge in, and I have some questions which I think will be a bridge between Exodus and Joshua. As God led Israel's escape through the Red Sea, do you remember how many battles Moses had to win against the Egyptians?
Depends what you mean by win.
All right, how many battles did Moses fight against Egyptians?
That depends what you mean by fight.
As I recall, he picked one fight and got one Egyptian and then disappeared for 40 years. I hope he has improved in wisdom since then. And let's find out. How did God respond in this bridging lesson to an unprovoked attack by Amalekites? Did I pronounce it okay?
I think so.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, so the Israelites, under Moses' leadership, had escaped Egypt. They were safely across the Red Sea. And now they're in trouble, in that they are a large group, and those that are old and weak are at the back. And those are those that the Amalekites choose to prey on. So the Amalekites are vandals or brigands or bullies, it seems to me. And how did Moses respond to this attack?
Well, with that story, we are in Exodus chapter 17. And it tells that Amalek. And that seems to me to be an interesting expression, because we can read it as a group of vandals, like you described them, Bob, and there have been multiple ways of reading this expression, Amalek as an arch enemy, as the enemy of God's people who are now freed from slavery, and they come to fight against the Israelites who are out in the desert. And Moses asks Joshua to go ahead. And so Joshua becomes now the fighter and the warrior, and that takes us directly from Exodus into the book of Joshua.
Thank you. Dr. Washburn?
I think I want to go back a little bit to your first question, because I think it's really easy for us to want an answer to, like, did Moses or Joshua or any number of other leaders sort of in their humanness, right? Maybe out of a fear response, get provoked to unnecessary violence. At least that's part of what I hear behind these questions is like, how do we discern who's initiating what and for what purpose and at what cost? And it strikes me that throughout these texts, we see a wide range, you know, because we have in those early chapters of Exodus, Moses, you know, I said, oh, it depends what you mean by win or fight. But really, like Moses stands, Moses invites the people to stand and be still and watch what the Lord, right, the deliverer is going to do for them. And you have that motif coming here and there later on in the biblical text also when there's a very fearful situation people face. Sometimes what is emphasized is this invitation to stand still and watch the deliverance that the Lord will provide. And then you have other instances where the emphasis, right, we're asked to look at God said to go fight and you go fight and you do it just this way. And because we did it just this way, right, God delivered us. And so I guess I just want to highlight that both of these are threads that come up in the text. The idea of, I don't know, maybe it's a very human thing that if we win, we feel like that's evidence of God's favor. You know what I mean? That shows that we are kind of with God or that God is with us. But the text problematizes that, right? Because there's no formula that is consistently. There are major voices, but there's always a counter voice, right? There's always a, but sometimes all you need to do is stand still. So I just want to
sort of remember correctly
that
in the case of the Red Sea, Moses said specifically, stand still. Egyptians, which are scaring you, you're not going to see them again. Just stand still and see what the Lord does.
And that to me, that text is, I don't know, that text and others like it invite our attention for multiple reasons because it almost seems, what would you call it? Like I'm thinking of a child who you want to give a new experience to. You might exaggerate it. So for instance, if you're trying to set a new boundary, instead of like telling a child in a new house, okay, well, you can open the door to this person and this person and this person. You might just say, hey, for now, you do not open the door to anyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in that story, in the people's fleeing from Egypt, it almost seems like they were supposed to have the experience of intentionally backing themselves into a corner. In other words, actually doing what was counterintuitive to trying to stay safe. Like, in other words, getting themselves into a situation where they were like blocked on every side. And then they were told, stand still and watch.
And on this occasion, the Israelites are the subjects of an unprovoked attack by Amalekites, as I read it. And this is urgent. Did Moses ask for specific guidance from God on how to deal with the Amalekites?
The story itself does not say that at all. So Moses is not addressing or requesting or appearing before God about that. He hands over the command to Joshua and say, go fight and I will stay on this hill and raise my hands. And so Moses is raising his hands. He is supported by the two other men on either side. And every time Moses has his hands, his arms up, the battle is going well in favor of the Israelites. And when his arms are tired and he goes down, then Amalek wins. And so in the end, the prayer posture of Moses becomes the signal for the victory.
I'm wondering about preparation. Now, suppose we were at a university picnic and someone said, choose up, let's have some players for volleyball. Would that speaker assume that the players knew something about volleyball before they were picked? In this case, if I remember correctly, Moses says to Joshua, pick some men and go out and fight Amalek. So they'd been out of Egypt just a few weeks. how much time and equipment had they developed to know how to fight Amalekites?
I don't, like when I read this text, I don't read it as even addressing those practical questions. Like I almost wonder if it's serving some kind of purpose of knitting together the work of or the legacy of Moses and Joshua, because that's going to be a back and forth that continues throughout many other texts. And part of like one of the things the lesson points out when it's looking at the framing of the book of Joshua, for instance, is it talks about how in the first chapter of the book of Joshua, you have Moses' name written much more than Joshua's name. So you have this idea that Moses, and Moses is described as the servant of the Lord. And Joshua is seen as the assistant to Moses. In other words, Moses is this one with this larger-than-life legacy. And then the lesson points out, which I find very interesting, that over the course of the book of Joshua, you have this, like, Joshua taking on more and more of that legacy, that when you get toward the end of the book, Joshua is actually referred to as the servant of the Lord, like calling forth this title that was given to Moses. And so when I read this story in Exodus, to me, it really serves a, it's a short story. I mean, you could tell it to your kids by the campfire in a few
minutes.
Would
you want to?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Most cultures around the world do not spare children from the wide range of human experience. but
including,
you know what I mean?
Including
yes. Violence, yes. But it ties together their legacies and kind of paints this picture.
So Joshua went and he fought Amalekites. Sometimes the battle was in his favor, sometimes not. There seemed to be a correlation between the position of Moses' hands and how the battle went. Did that mean that Aaron and Hur, who were holding Moses' hands, were controlling God?
Now that's an interesting thought. I assume we do not have time at this point.
That's
to
true.
Go
I think we're ready. Have we heard of too many deadly fights, especially in the former land of Canaan? And on both sides of these fights, how can the fighters and the politicians claim they're simply doing what God told them to? I'm afraid that we'll deal with violence through the whole rest of the book. And as we read through week after week the book of Joshua, what kinds of questions should we ask? And let's remember them for next time. It is the time that our time is up. And in coming weeks, there'll be many more questions about Joshua. First, thanks to our broadcast technician, Corin Bailey, and of course, deep thanks to our conversation partners, Dr. Matilda Fry and Dr. Jody Washburn. Again, I am Bob Resch, and we hope that you can join us again next week for more of the Good Word.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.